he might use us, but he will do it anyway. So we started with that. Then we looked at, with Dave and Andy, we looked at a picture of flourishing in the local church. So we looked at just some ideas of what a flourishing church might look like. And you had an idea, an opportunity to chat and think about that. And then we looked at some of the stuff to do with Paul's church planting models. And we did some stuff last week around, you know, what it might look like in your community. What could you do now? When I left here last week, the plan for tonight was unknown. I knew what the topic was. We had nobody to speak. Amazingly, I shouldn't say amazingly because God does it. It should be normal, shouldn't it? We have two people to speak to us tonight, and we're particularly looking at models of church planting. So some of the stuff you talked about last week in terms of what you could possibly dream of happening in your local area, how might that actually practically happen? What things might be needed? One of the things we talked about last week was what could you do without permission? So the question is, when do you need permission? You know, what are the structures in place to actually support that? So I'm very pleased that we have two people. So the first person is Sarah Molyneux-Hetherington. I'll get it the right way around. Sarah is from Ely Diocese and is a lay pioneer minister planting a church into Downham Market, which is fantastic because it's that side of us. And then later on, Rhiannon King, the Archdeacon of Ipswich, is going to come and speak to us about some other models, and I'll introduce her later. But Sarah, if you'd like to come up.
I just chimed in really quietly beside her.
So
you have hot pain, isn't it?
It's like
got a wall wiped. Hurry on.
So we're just going to do a little bit of a question and answer, really. So you're a lay pioneer minister.
Lay pioneer.
Which means?
This is always really good fun one at the pub. Lay is an I'm not ordained. And pioneer as in I'm trying something new. It's usually how I kind of phrase it. The practical element of that is I'm a stipendiary person. So I receive a stipend like a clergy, and I operate in much the same way as the clergy does in my status and all that sort of stuff. I'm not one, and I haven't realised yet. So keep it quiet.
Okay, so, and you're doing some work in Downham Market.
I am.
So yeah. Do you want to just give us a picture of how that started and the sort of journey so far?
So changing market towns might be something that you've heard of or not heard of. I'm going to assume you haven't heard of it. Changing market towns is an SDF strategic development fund project, which is looking at working with market towns across the Ely Diocese, particularly in the north of the diocese, and recognising that market towns, as you guys are aware, are a particular place and often are left behind in government thinking, in health thinking, all these sort of ways. And so the project is working across a number of market towns, and I'm in Downham Market. Predominantly, that model looks like working with the inherited churches in the area, the churches that are already there. In Downham Market, that looks like a church plant, as it does in Huntington as well. So that's a bit of a context. I got asked in about 2 years before I arrived, would I like to come and do some church planting in Ely Diocese? And I kind of went, where? I was in Devon. I'm from Cumbria originally. Don't really go east, if I'm being honest. It's too flat. I don't like it. Where are your hills? I'm very uncomfortable most of the time. You can see too far. I don't like it. And then they said Downham Market. And I went, where? But we worked this process. And so we arrived in Downham Market in August 2018. With this vision or with this job role really of looking to create a worshiping community that would complement the existing Anglican churches and existing ecumenical churches in the area but be distinctive from them. I could go on and on. Do you want me to
interrupt me? Can I just ask you about that complementing?
Yeah.
What does it look like to complement something? Are you part of the local church?
No.
Are you not? How does that work?
So that's the kind of the million-dollar question, isn't it? a big thing for us when we arrived in Downham Market. Downham Market's got a really quite diverse church structure. In some ways, there's quite a number of churches, but all very quite low attendance as a proportion of the town. Compliment for us meant a real, and for us, I mean my husband, me and the dog. Dog's really important part of it, but also the community of people gathering around us. If I use us, that's often what I'm meaning. For us, it meant really listening to our community. So when I arrived, boots on ground, I did three things. I went out and I met the churches, and I would try and go to at least one service and then meet the minister of that church to understand where they are now, where they've come from, where they're going, what they feel really excited about, what is God calling them to do, and they are really excited about their da-da-da ministry or their da-da-da ministry, and they might not look like there's lots there, but there's so much potential and they're really excited about it. And where are the areas that, like, we know there's a need, but it's not for us, we can't do it, we don't even know how to tackle it. To start to build a picture of who is not present in any of these places, who is not visible in any of these places, and what sort of grouping of people do the existing churches feel like we don't know how to tackle or reach those people? So did that. Met with people who were Christians but were either going to no church in Downham Market or were travelling for church to understand why are you travelling or why are you creating your own thing in your house or what have you, to understand from their perspective what's currently in Downham Market and what isn't. Recognising you're going to ask two people and get 10 different answers. But there we go. And then I met with the community at large, volunteering everywhere. And from that, I built a picture of what was going to complement what was in the town, because it's God's kingdom. It's his kingdom. It's not mine. It's not anyone else's. And so we are all working together to bring God's kingdom. And that meant thinking about what charitable stuff in the town was going to complement the town, as well as in the kind of Christian language, what was going to complement. A lot of the time that turned out to be teenagers. Somewhat unexpectedly, some of the churches in Downham Market didn't know what to do with the youth. Coming from working in prisons, my husband works with asylum seekers, we were like, okay, the gangs of Downham Market are not that scary, I'll be honest with you. It's a bunch of very confused teenagers hanging around a library. It's quite adorable, really. But they don't like to think that. They find it very frustrating when I tell them that. You know, trying to make sure that we were, as far as possible, doing what was going to be wanted of us to do. Long answer. But.
So where about are you on the journey?
Okay, church planting. I'm going to be overly crude here on your models of church planting and kind of talk about the sort of two ends of the spectrum. And it's, I'm being crude here. Please excuse the fact that there's lots of different ways of doing it. And Rianne's going to be much better articulated than me than this. But, one model is that you are, you are a group of people often already collected, either in a church community or in a learning community, missional community. And you have some sense of what binds you together. And you want to go out into the community and bring something of what you found, which is great, to another community that is similar enough that you think it's going to work or, you know, that sort of thing. And then there's kind of what we're doing, which is there's a group of disparate people who don't really know each other. And there's no sending church, no sending model, nothing to kind of adapt from. There's just nothing. That's where we are. That means that model generally takes a lot longer to get going. It takes a long time for it to get established. That's where we're at. So we are a year and a half in and we're still not calling what it is church yet. So that was from September that I arrived to January. I was doing that, just meeting people. From January onwards, we were really lucky and that we very quickly had a couple of families who were saying, we want to explore this. That's not expected. You'd expect a lot longer than that in my experience. But we did in this case. From January to January, we did a build team. Didn't like plant team, I like build because it implies work. Because it is, building a church is a huge amount of work, emotionally, physically, financially, everything. And we explored together. We are now at the point where that build team comes together for a specific purpose, for a specific time. That's not church community, so we've now dropped the language of team, or now a church community. It's moving into experimental phase where we're trialing out what we might put out as our service offer. We're called Table. That's quite a recent addition. Table is because we kind of saw what God was calling us to do is sort of like a triangle, three things. We come to the table at our church service. It's at my house. We have dinner every time. We eat every single time. We have a full sit-down meal. My washing up is crazy. But we do that. We have a board game cafe called Dice and Decks that we've launched in Downer Market. So we play together. And then we're looking to do some stuff around helping with food poverty and feeding people. So out of those things, table came. So that's kind of where we're at now.
Okay, so how do you fit within the sort of Anglican church structures and the parish church, Ely diocese? How does that work for you?
I don't know. It's a developing picture. So we're at the point now where we're in initial consultation for a BMO, a Bishop's Mission Order. Is that language we're kind of familiar with? Some nods, some fear. Okay, that's fine. That's usual. So a Bishop Mission Order is a way of recognising what you are doing as being an Anglican church as opposed to a kind of missional community, mission initiative, that sort of thing. So we're at that process of, I might be not the textbook answer, but that's what I'm going to go with. I'm looking at the bishop there thinking I've probably not given the right answer. we're at that point of wanting to kind of really call what we're doing church. I think there's something really beautiful. I think a lot of time what I do in my job is just see something and call it holy, recognize what it is as being holy. And I think a lot of time what the permission givers do with Fresh Expressions is come along and say, this is holy, this is church. So we're at that point now of saying what this is, as fragile and embryonic and small and messy as it is beautifully church. So that's where we're at. How we fit in with the structures is the developing picture. We're in a slightly more, we're in a complex situation, perhaps, where our parish is a forward in faith parish, which means it doesn't fall under the diocesan bishop of the area. It falls under a flying bishop, which is not as cool as it sounds. When I heard about flying bishop, that is not as cool as it sounds, I'll be honest with you. So we have, you know, a number of different stakeholders involved. So we're trying to move forward in as respectful and complementary way as we can with our ecumenical partners as well. So we're trying to establish, how do we fit into the deanery? How do we be good neighbours in what we're doing? One thing that I try to do is I just turn up to everything. You know, deanery meetings and stuff like that, because it's really important if you're doing, especially if you're doing a church plant, to be tactile, to be known, to be within grasp, I call it. Because when you get involved with a church plant, a spectre of what you could be goes out in front of you. It's kind of, I call it chasing down the ghost. Sometimes this view of what I might be, might do, might be up to goes out ahead of me into my local area. And people get really scared. And people get very worried. And people sometimes think, well, for some people, I'm a walking boiler. You could fix the church roof with what you spend on me. And some people feel that really acutely. And so one big thing I'd say for working with your local area is try to be present, be within people's reach. So if they've got a question, concern, fear, you are there and relatable and they can actually ask it of you. And that's been a huge thing. By being able to put a face to the spectre that goes out ahead, I've been able to squash that fear that comes about in ignorance. Not ignorance, that sounds awful. In a lack of information where there isn't real knowledge known. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Cool. That's great. Okay, I'm going to throw it over and see if people want to ask any specific questions. Oh, there's one already. Okay.
Sarah, when you have your table, church, whatever, so you have a meal, and what else do you do sort of practically? Obviously, you sort of chat away and share your lives, but be interested to hear what else happens at table time.
So people are meant to arrive at 3:45 for tea and coffee for a 4 o'clock start. Inevitably, families wander in about 4:05. But we have tea and coffee to begin with, and we have worship. We have a little band in our living room. We're very blessed that actually we were very musical gifted people, so we do quite a lot of sung worship. So we usually have some worship. We usually have some sort of time of prayer, reflecting on the songs we've just sung. And then we try to have a game. We have a catchphrase, which is everyone gets to play. So what we do is really highly participative, and we talk in terms of play, because play releases people. It frees people. You don't have to be good at it. We're just playing. And we are 50% under 16, going from ages 3 up to 15. So play is a really important part of what we do. So we play a game, and we see that game as a way of communicating what we're looking at that day. It's not completely tangential. It's another way of communicating the message. We will then do some sort of activity. It is often discussion. It's often three people go into three different rooms in the house and discuss. We have done the hall thing as a game. We have done one where I turned my house into like an art gallery and did lots of different representations of gods in different rooms, go around and explore. We have done writing our own poems, that sort of stuff. We've just done a barbecue sometimes as well, but it's a discussion. And then we come back together, feeding what we've learned from each other, what we've heard from each other, and we do what we call a messy Lord's Prayer, which is where everyone says the Lord's Prayer, but whatever their version of it is. We don't have one version, and we kind of all start at the same time and we sort of all finish around the same time. So that's what we do. But one thing that's really important with what we do, and then we have dinner. That's a big part of what we do. But we have a games room, or what we've called a games room in our house. And that is particularly for our young people, but for other people as well. There's a real consent that you come in and out as much as you want. With church plants, especially around families, kids are often dragged along, whether they want to or not. Mum and dad are bought into the church, so they're bought into the church. And we tried to make sure we had a conversation about bringing them in and making sure they had as much choice. So a big part of what our church gathering is the fact that you can go up to the games room and play games and be on the Xbox, and you can come back down. And we're very lucky that our kids generally choose to stay with us. But that's actually a part of what we do, is that you don't have to be in the gathered space. Long answer, sorry.
Anyone else got a question? No?
I may have already said, but do you meet on a Sunday or a Saturday?
We meet on a Sunday at 4 p.m. Yeah. We're thinking a bit, we're actually thinking about moving a bit later, particularly because we're looking at one of our priorities, as I've mentioned, is teenagers. And so we're obviously really mindful of the Sunday morning sports fixtures, but also a lot of the Sunday afternoon sport fixtures, that sort of thing. So we're really mindful of actually being a little bit later on the Sunday, which does perhaps preclude families with younger ones. But it's kind of, I think, every church prioritises some people. We either just honest with ourselves about it or not. And so I'm quite comfortable with that we are prioritising young or teenagers, really.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And you're hanging around a bit?
I'm hanging a little bit, yeah. I was saying I've ended up being temporarily full-time carer, so I can't stay for ages because I've got to get back. But yeah, I'm around for a little bit.
Okay, so we're going to switch now. Thank you so much. It's braving the elements and coming to Norwich Diocese. So, Rhiannon, would you like to come up? So, Archdeacon of Ipswich, Director of Inspiring Ipswich.
Yep.
Over the border, all that. So we're really grateful for you coming. And Rhiannon's going to just talk to us a little bit. Formerly Director of Church Planting in Birmingham Diocese.
Yeah.
So a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom to give us. So I'm just going to hand over
and
see where it goes. Thank you so
lovely.
Much.
Thank you so much. It's really lovely to be here. Thank you, Sarah, so much for everything you shared. I get goosebumps sometimes when I just hear different people share about what God's doing in different parts of the country. And I used to be in Ely Diocese, so I just love hearing about what God has been doing over there. So thank you, Sarah, so much. I've been the Archdeacon of Ipswich for almost a year now, and to be honest, they don't let me out much. So it's really nice. Go over the border and to meet some other folks. And I don't think I've met any of you before, so it's just really nice to be with you this evening, particularly as a few days ago I didn't know that I was going to be here. So that's great. But we just, a few months ago, finished our church planting course in Ipswich. And so I thought, oh, it'd be nice to, you know, get involved here and see what you're up to.
I've been asked to talk a bit about models of church planting this evening, and I was talking to the gentleman over there just before, and he didn't quite hear me, and he said, "What's that, muddles of church planting?" And actually, sometime it is a bit of a muddle, because we're all sort of learning together, the whole Church of England at the moment. We're sort of recovering this thing that's been dormant for years and years and years. And not everywhere, but it has been dormant in lots of churches. And so there is a lot of muddling through. So I quite like that, muddles of church planting. So I'm going to talk about different models that there are. But I thought, if you don't mind, I'd just like to kick off just by telling you a bit about myself and how I sort of have stumbled into this, because it is very much a stumbling. But I imagine actually that some of you will be able to relate to some of the things I say, because, well, you'll see. So I grew up in a village, quite a small village. Well, depends on, it's all relative, isn't it? But a village of about 1,000 to 2,000, just outside Oxford. And my mum doesn't go to church, still doesn't go to church, but my dad did about every month. But I went along from quite an early age and loved it, because in the Sunday school they used to give us prizes, often edible, and that kept me going. And my friends used to go, and so that was a really a good part of my childhood. And in this very small village church, there were some fantastic people, a lot of them who've become my friends now. And knowing that my family were never going to do this, they would sometimes say, "Come with us to Spring Harvest. Come with us to Greenbelt. Come with us on this house party." And I just used to go wherever I was invited. And I'm just so profoundly grateful for those people in that village church who taught me about Jesus and helped me to love Jesus. So by the time I was 13, 14, I was exploring it for myself and made that decision to follow Christ, and also felt a call at that point to full-time Christian ministry. So I knew from that age onwards that was going to be probably the direction of my life. And actually, the more I talk to people, the more I hear that that's quite a common story of people in ministry, that often that calling comes from those teenage years. So we need to really encourage the young people in our churches. Well, I used to go on a Sunday night to a crusader group in this little village. It was led at the time, which wouldn't be allowed now, just by one person, by a doctor in the village. I now realise it could be called a youth congregation. We met every week, we prayed together, we worshipped together, we enjoyed fellowship together, and we would share communion together. So that was perhaps one of my first experiences of a fresh expression of church, possibly. Well, I love that. I went off and did all the college stuff, university stuff, and 8 years later, I found myself in theological college. And I had to write an essay about a fresh expression of church. I don't think it was quite being called that then, but the principal of our theological college had written a book that some of you may have come across, Mission Shaped Church. It's now a sort of iconic book that talked all about how we need a mixed economy in the Church of England, of inherited churches, which most of us are probably part of, and also new emerging churches of all sorts of different kinds. Anyway, I remember writing this essay, which I think was marked by the principal, and I was arguing completely against it. And that's why I remember it, because I was so against it. And it was a rubbish essay, and it didn't get marked well. But I remember that right then, because I've come quite a distance since there. Well, I went off to be a curate in Ely Diocese, and I've only just realised this recently, but I went into a team ministry, and in this team ministry was an Anglo-Catholic church and a sort of middle-of-the-road, they were both town centre churches, and a village church and an estate church, and a little local ecumenical partnership on an area of new housing. And this is the bit of I've only just recently realised, that really I was called to minister in all of those, but to have special responsibility for this little church on a housing estate, which I now realise was, of course, a church plant. But we never used the language of that back then. And it was an ecumenical plant, so it was Methodists and Baptists and Anglicans. And there had been a curate looking after it before I arrived, so I didn't start it, and I don't know much about how it was started. But although the curate before me had done a great job, for various reasons, by the time I got there, there were six people. But they weren't just any old six people. These were a cracking bunch of six people who were real prayers. And as soon as I arrived, they just wanted to be praying and drawing me into prayer. Now, I was 28. I didn't really know what I was doing. But my enthusiasm and their prayer meant that that church over the next 4 years grew 600%. And I quite like saying that, because when you start small, you can do things like that. And actually, that's happening throughout the whole country. Little Fresh Expressions and bigger church plants. The growth is phenomenal, 600%. But when I left, there was no money for another curate, and the church ended. So we got to 36. Oh, I have to tell you a good bit in between. One day when we were praying in that small church, remember it was just very, very small, we felt God was calling us to pray to him for 10 new people. So we prayed specifically for 10 new people. And the following Sunday, this woman arrived. Well, we could have been a bit annoyed because it was one woman and not 10 until she told us she had 10 children. That was wonderful. And over the years, not all of her children, but a number of children came. But we always knew that she'd come from God to be part of it. Anyway, that church grew. And now I realize that was a new congregation in a housing estate. And although it ended, all those Christians went off and joined other churches. So it wasn't wasted. I then went to be a vicar just outside Cambridge and ended up with one of the most fantastic curates in the whole world. And I learned so much from her. And one day she said to me, we need to start this thing. And she described it. She didn't use the word messy church, but it was messy church. And she said, well, how about this? And she talked about, you know, meeting in the school in one of our villages. I had four villages. Meeting in the school and inviting all these parents that she knew through the school gate. And doing lots of really creative stuff and doing a bit of worship. And it was one of those early messy churches. Even though I didn't recognize it, it was a fresh expression of church. And over the years, we saw people baptized there and come to faith. And we didn't try and steer them into proper church, but we recognise that that was church. So without knowing it, I was part of this fresh expression of church, and I loved it. Another memory I have for those days is that I remember the archdeacon coming to visit me, and he said, oh, there is a church down the road, and they'd like to plant somewhere in your patch, and you've got this small village with a lovely little church. And they were wondering whether they could plant a church there. And my immediate reaction was, great, that would be lovely. Then I started telling other people in my congregation. They said, are you mad? Are you mad, they said. Don't you realise that all our young families, they'll all just go and join them? But I still knew that it was right to welcome them and to say, yes, you're welcome here. Now, in the end, they didn't come. But now, being an archdeacon, I remember that conversation, and I'm glad that we always said to them they could come. Well, after I finished being a vicar, I moved to Birmingham Diocese to be a mission enabler and then a director of mission. And in the last 5-10 years, lots of things have changed in the Church of England to do with mission. It's different in every diocese, but there used to be one of me about 8 years ago, and then there were 40. We had 40 people in the mission department within a few years. And a lot of that's to do with a change of thinking from the centre of the Church of England and some resources from the church commissioners. And Sarah mentioned this thing called SDF funding, strategic development funding, and that made all the difference. So over those few years, I just heard more and more about fresh expressions of church and church planting and really sort of mission and ministry changed quite a lot. And we started realizing that we really needed to fan into flame this thing that God was doing throughout the whole country. Well, one of the things we wanted to do was really encourage church planting in Birmingham Diocese. I think someone in Church House in Westminster had said to Holy Trinity Brompton, the church in central London, if you can do something in Birmingham, then we'll believe you can do it anywhere, because they knew it was going to be tough. So a group from this HDB church came to Birmingham as director of mission. I actually knew very little about it. This was the bishop. He just swept in and told us we were doing this. And so I was nervous. I thought it might not work. And you know, the most amazing things happened. And now I'm just the most passionate person about church planting of every sort, because I have seen it with my own eyes in so many different places. So this church in Birmingham, they came with a group of, I think, 20 people from London, so not a huge number. And we enabled them to buy a really battered old warehouse in the middle of Birmingham. It'd been empty for 17 years because it had no proper ceiling, floor or loos. And this group of folks, they grew that church over 2 years to 700 people. Every year they had at least 70 people coming to faith and being discipled. They would have alpha groups with hundreds of people. They raised £2 million to put some loos in and sort out the floor. The leader of the church said to me once, he said, the only fundraising I've ever done before was to help my son raise £45 for his swimming thing at school. So we're not talking about people who got lots of experience, but they had massive faith. That church, which is called Gas Street in Birmingham, that church then planted another church into one of the poorest areas of Birmingham. And then they have planted a church into Coventry and two others since. And slowly, as the diocese, we realised that this was something quite different to what we'd seen before. It was a work of God and we needed to get behind it. So we decided we needed to appoint a director of church planting. So we advertised, and I wrote this advertisement, and we tried to find someone. And you know what? People who are church planters are so keen being church planters, they don't want to go and work for a diocese and be the director of church planting. So in the end, the bishop said to me, they wanted me to do it, even though I hadn't led a church plant, because we just needed to encourage more and more church plants. So I did that for a couple of years, my last couple of years in Birmingham, and then I felt called to move to Ipswich. And one of the things that really excited me about Ipswich was that there is a vision there to plant 25 new churches in Ipswich. So in Ipswich, we have 25 existing, perhaps called inherited churches, and the idea was to strengthen them and then add 25 new churches. We've got 6 years to do this, some really great prayer support and financial support, and I love it. I love it. So 3 weeks ago, we planted our first church from a church called St. Matthew's in the centre of Ipswich. And 25 people felt called to start a new church, which is called Bridge Church. And they just started meeting informally. And they will officially launch their church just after Easter. We've got two other church plants in the pipeline, plus about 10 fresh expressions of church. Now, as I use that terminology, I'm using quite contested terminology, because whoever you talk to will describe it in different ways. I think it's a spectrum, and Sarah talked earlier about it being a spectrum. And, you know, I just think God loves every single part of the spectrum. For me, church planting is a bit more top-down, where a bishop, for example, will say, we really would love a new church in this housing area or this part of town that has been neglected. So it's quite sort of, you know, there's a group of people and they go to a particular area. And usually they start worshipping straight away and reaching out in mission. That's at one end of the spectrum. And the other is a bit more what Sarah was talking about. It's very bottom up and organic, a bit slower, but less attractional. So you've got the whole breadth. And different things work in different places. So that's just a quick update of how I've stumbled into the role that I'm in, even though I've never led a church plant, although now I'm thinking that perhaps that little one in my curacy perhaps was. So what I'd like to talk about now is just a range of different models. Now, I've got lots of good friends in the church planting circle world and good friends in the fresh expression world, and I call them both mafias. Mafias in the best possible use of that term. But if I talk to my fresh expressions folks, they would say that fresh expressions is this big umbrella and church planting is one strand within. But if I talk to my church planting friends, they say church planting is the big umbrella and fresh expressions are one element within. So it really does depend on who you talk to. Now, here's the list of the different models that I thought I'd say something about this evening. So I've got a range of different fresh expressions to kick off with, and then some more traditional church planting models, and then revitalizations. But if someone comes along next week and describes it in different ways, listen to them as well, because there's just so many different ways of dividing it up and exploring it and thinking about it. So this is just one way. Before I get into that, are there any questions or comments about anything I've said so far, or anything particularly that you'd like to know about? Thank you.
Just from a definition point of view, putting new monastics in fresh expression when they've just been given a whole criteria of specific language by Lambeth Palace.
You told me earlier that you're involved in this, so I bow to your wisdom. So that's an important thing to hear. For you, you wouldn't put it in that category. Okay. Yes, who I used to work with, yeah. Yes.
Recognised communities as they're now called. So,
thank you. No, that's helpful. As I said, everyone's got a different categorisation of the difference, so that's very helpful. So I'm going to whiz through them, and I put together some little diagrams for you just yesterday. But as you'll see, it took a little while working out the little bit. So I got lazy in some places. So I'm going to tell you where I got lazy so you know how it should look. And next time I do this talk, I'll have gone a step further. So we're going to go through each of these, but I would love you to interact. So please, if anything's not clear or you've got a story about one of them, or you think my little people should be in a different configuration, please just, you know, shout out. Okay, so I wanted to start off. I've tried to be thinking that I know you're mostly a rural diocese, as we are in Eds and Ips. This is a made-up church, a made-up benefice, okay? But it could, if you're not in a benefice, if you're in a town, anyone here from a town? Okay, so if you're in a town, you might be able to think of these three different sort of triangles as three different congregations within the same church. But I've been trying to imagine that most of you might be in a rural benefice. And, of course, you might have 10 churches or two, but I've just plumped for three for the purposes of my pictures. And I've called this the Three Rivers United Benefice, because in almost every diocese I've worked in, there's been a three rivers. Is there a Three Rivers here?
No, I've been in a Two Rivers.
Yeah, I know, and I've been in a Five Rivers as well. So, okay, lovely. So anyway, so this is totally fictitious, but this is the Three Rivers United Benefice, and I reckon that perhaps they're made up of three churches, and I've just called them St. Jude's, St. Mary's, St. James's, and just for the sake of argument, perhaps each of them has a congregation, one at 8, one at 9:30, one at 11, and they meet on a Sunday morning. So that's the key background that we're starting with. Okay, so you've got to get that into your head. It's got three sort of triangles of churches, which could be congregations all in the same church or could be geographically located. And I've decided that they are part of the Spring Valley Deanery, because I thought that sounded quite cheery. Okay, so the first model of fresh expression is messy church model. And remember, I haven't gone through all the models within Fresh Expressions because there are hundreds, but I just thought I'd choose some of the most popular ones. So the messy church model, well, I told you a bit about how it was for me in my when my curate set it up, would be that some of the people from this benefice would go off and they would set up a messy church. And it might have someone with a pram and a baby and someone older and another baby and a splat, because all messy churches are messy, so I thought it needs a splat. And then all the figures in yellow from now on are new people that have come, okay? So new people who have joined them. And in messy churches, they may be people who are completely unchurched or de-churched. So they used to go to church at some point but no longer do. So some of the people from this Three Rivers benefice have set up a messy church model, and now they're meeting together. Now, one of the things, as you may know, is that some messy churches would count as a Fresh Expression and some wouldn't. And so often on forms, people put messy church down, and it could be or it couldn't. So does anyone know the distinction on what makes a messy church a Fresh Expression? There's one particular thing. Okay, well, it's all to do with what is your gut intention for the messy church. If your messy church, you want the people who come to funnel them back in to one of the existing churches, and that's really what you want to see, young families come into your existing services, that's a great messy church, and it's a great missional thing to do, but it wouldn't be called a Fresh Expression. If you recognize that the messy church is to become church in its own right, and as people develop in faith, you want to provide for them all the elements of a church, then that is a Fresh Expression of church. So if you're going, so for example, like in the instance I told you about, people started to want to be baptized when they wanted to become Christians. If we'd said, oh, you need to come and start worshiping at the main church and be baptized in our old church building, then that would show that we ultimately wanted them to join the inherited church. But if we said, no, we're going to find a way of baptizing you in this messy church because this is your church, then that's a Fresh Expression. Now, to be honest, both are great things, so it doesn't really matter which you do, but that is just the technical difference. Have you heard of a man called George Lings? You have. George Lings is now retired, but he used to work for the Church Army Research Unit based in Sheffield. And he has phoned more people than you can believe about messy churches and about Fresh Expressions throughout the country. And he came up with 10 different criteria for something to count as a Fresh Expression of church. I just added that they meet monthly on Saturday afternoons in this particular fictitious example. I'm going to just rattle through these because sometimes someone will ask you, well, what's the definition of a Fresh Expression? And this is George Ling's definition. And all these slides, by the way, I sent to Jonathan. Where's Jonathan? Yeah, so if Jonathan, you could circulate them, could you, if people wanted them? So really, it has to be something that's new, not just something that's been around for ages that you've renamed. It has to have the intention from the start of working with people who don't go to church. Needs to meet at least once a month. It needs to have its own name and identity. Its intention has to be a church on its own, not feed into real church. It is real church. And then there's a thing about it either being Anglican or whatever and having some sort of authority, some form of recognized leadership. The majority of leaders in it see it as their main church. And it's aiming to be one holy Catholic and apostolic church. We could go into that later if anyone's interested. And then this is the hardest bit for it. That it's aiming to be self-financing, self-governing, and self-reproducing. The whole business of Fresh Expressions and church plants is how it's not just about doing one and then forgetting. It's about having the DNA of multiplication in it. So you're always thinking, how could this messy church start another messy church? How could this cafe church start another one? So it's always, you're always thinking about what next. Okay, so that Cafe church. Has anyone been part of a cafe church? Okay. No, you might have been. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, great. Okay, so in a Costa, yeah. And if you didn't know, whoever owns Costa is a Christian, and he has written into the contracts in Costa that they are to be particularly hospitable to Christians, which is why hundreds and hundreds of fresh expressions of church around the country happen in Costa coffee shops. So that's useful to know if you didn't already. Okay, so cafe church model. Here's your congregations again. And again, they're going to send some people out and they're going to sit. Often these happen in a church building, in a church hall, sometime in a school, but usually around tables, usually involving food. Sometimes people do it on a breakfast time and the papers are there on a Sunday morning. Lots of different models. And again, it's something that's just easier for a lot of people who aren't Christians to be drawn into. You don't have to know lots of complicated liturgy to feel comfortable at home. So it's a different way of doing church. And this one meets monthly on a Saturday morning while they're reading the papers together. And usually there's a God slot. And over time, as people come to faith, there'll be more and more sort of offshoots of it, discipleship groups, perhaps doing Alpha or something like that. The next one is the Forest Church or Green Church. We're just about to start one of these in Ipswich. I've only been to one Forest Church thing, but what happened was I went with this group of people, everyone in their wellies. We went into woods and we were given lots of exercises. It was all age. There was lots of children there. We had to go and pick up a leaf here and a this and a that. And then we used that for a short act of worship. And then, you know, people got their thermos flasks out. There was a prayer and a bit of worship. And then people enjoyed each other's company and ate and drank together. So in this particular case, again, they're sending a group out and they're going into some forests. There we are. And you've got some yellow people again. So the yellow people, again, are people who are drawn to this. So, for example, if you're involved in people who are really passionate about the outside, and I guess there are lots of people in Norfolk and Suffolk who are passionate about the outside, it's a great way of inviting people. It's not saying come to church as people expect, but it's saying, you know, we're going on a walk. There will be this Christian element to it because it's always important to be honest and upfront about that. It's not about pretending it's something it's not. Being honest and upfront, welcoming people, and then you build and you grow disciples through it. And this, I decided, is called the Three Rivers Forest Church, and they meet monthly. Often forest churches meet monthly on a Sunday afternoon. New monastic community. I'll have a go at this, and then you can say how you would describe it. Okay, so Pat, can we have the microphone ready and poised? So you've got your three different churches, and it might be that there is a house. It might be an empty vicarage. It might be somewhere that's rented. Who knows? But often, for a new monastic community, there is some sort of building somewhere. And I've put a little bench and a lamp that is totally relevant. And quite often, it will be a small number of people who feel called to lead a new monastic life. And they might, for example, follow some sort of order of faith that they've all sort of agreed to. So it may be that they agree that they're going to pray together at 7 o'clock every morning, or they are going to give a chunk of their money to a particular cause, or that they are going to particularly reach out to a particular group in a parish. Often there's a rule of life, and quite often it's a small group, but they pray deeply for the community. And as a result, usually quite quickly, other people come in. So for every sort of three people, it might be one person comes in. What do you think? Do you want to have that? If you could have the microphone, that would be lovely.
Unity,
yeah,
and that would be recognise, but the key's in the monastic, so the monos. It's in the motivation. It's not about growth. You know, you're absolutely right. It's about prayer, and that's it, really. So if the focus is on growth or evangelism, then really it's not a monos. It's not a skete. It's you know, a church plant. There's a tension in the differentiation, I suppose. It's nuanced. So
interesting. I've not heard that said before. Certainly the ones I know about are wanting to grow, but deeply bedded in prayer. Thank you. So if you're interested in that, please go. What's your name again? David. Please go and talk to David more. A network church. Now, network churches can be around all sorts of different networks. It could be a sports network. So, for example, in Ipswich at the moment, I've got a couple of people who run. They do park runs, they love running, and they want to set up a running church. But they're not just going to do it in their parish, they're going to do it across the archdeaconry, across the deanery. But other people might have a passion for people in their 50s or people on this particular estate. So a network can be all sorts of things, but it tends not to be geographical. So you probably wouldn't have a network church just in one benefice, but you might have a network across a deanery. So some of these people, there's three of them, are going to join this network church. And did you see three people sort of descended from somewhere else? So they've come from another church. And then you've perhaps they've attracted some three friends who aren't Christians, who come from somewhere else. And together they're going to meet, park bench again. They're going to be called the Spring Valley Network Church, for example. But they might have a focus on a particular thing. So it might be some of you here have got a passion for a particular thing, and a network church might be needed. So if you start a new church outside your own parish, that's when you need a bishop's mission order, a BMO. Okay. And usually network churches just tend to meet once a month, but some of the bigger ones do meet every week. Right, a youth congregation. So again, we're trying to start one of these up in Ipswich. So some of the people from here, some of the younger people from these benefices, let's say four, they go, and perhaps one of their friends who's not a Christian but likes them, they come along from the start. Perhaps someone else who wants to sort of sit and watch from the back, and perhaps another four from somewhere else in the deanery, they all get together and they form a youth congregation. There's a guitar right there at the end, and we'll call them the Spring Valley Youth Congregation. So this is the sort of thing that can happen in a parish if you've got enough people, enough young people, or it can happen across a deanery or perhaps more than one deanery. And let's say they meet weekly on a Friday night. My youth group growing up, my youth congregation was always on a Sunday night, but they can, of course, be any time. Has anyone ever been part of a youth congregation or seen one at work? They're quite vibrant. You have, yes. Do you want to tell us anything about the one you've seen? That's fine. Okay. Right. Those are all fresh expressions so far, or at least I might describe them as fresh expressions. They tend to be small. Fresh expressions don't tend to grow over the size of about 40. So all the fresh expressions around the country, the way that they've had such a big impact is that there are an awful lot of them. Lots and lots and lots of small fresh expressions having a big impact because there are so many. And each of them often starting another one. Whereas church plants tend to be slightly bigger, but there are fewer of them. So I wanted to talk now about a church planting model of church. And this is the traditional, the trad church planting model. So this is in the Church of England is the most common at the moment. I've met some people earlier who are from Vineyard. And in Vineyard, who've been doing it a lot longer than the Church of England in recent years, often they will go into a cinema or a school, and they don't have a building during the week. But Anglican ones, for some reason, tend to have a building all through the week, so they can be doing things not just in homes. Right, so can you notice that here I've taken away a third of the people in those pyramids? Now, obviously it varies. Some church plants, you can take a minimum of two or three people. One church plant I heard last week had 100 people in, but usually they tend to be 10, 15, 20, 30. That's the sort of size that a leader might take. With my little diagram, this is where my diagrams don't work so well. I could only take a pyramid at a time, so you'll just have to know that it doesn't have to be that way. So here is a family. Sometimes it's a curate from a church, but it doesn't have to be someone who's ordained. They don't have to have a family. Let's say this is a curate and her husband and a little child, and they're sent by the Three Rivers Benefice with a big chunk of the congregation or a small chunk of the congregation to start a church plant. So usually they need the bishop's support, you need clear leadership, and you need a team. And let's say they start a new church and it's called St. Peter's. And they meet every Sunday morning. Now, see that arrow? That's quite a crucial arrow, and we'll come back to that later. But actually, we'll come back to it right now. Can you see that that is a bit like an umbilical cord? So the church, the planting church, the parent church, has sent the curate and her husband and that team of people, and you perhaps pray for them, you send them off, you might do a gift day for them. So you send them with prayers and some money and some training. And then in the traditional model, you snip the umbilical cord and you say, we'll still pray for you and we're still friends with you, but you're now going to be a church on your own. Okay, so that's quite a crucial bit, that's snipping. And sometimes that snips happens straight away and sometimes it's longer. Can take a year or something. The Minster model of church planting, please ignore my yellow figures at the moment, starts off in the same way. So you've got I've forgotten to put in the people that go with it. But anyway, you've got a group, you've got the bishop support, you've got some individuals, and already they've got some yellow people who have joined them. And actually what I should have done is added yellow people to the original, because what happens with a church plant is you send off some of your best people. They're your best people because often they're keen, which means they're givers. They give their time, they give their money, and often they're really excited. So often when the church plants happens, you're giving some of your best, most generous and gifted people, and they go to do something else. It's a massive act of generosity on behalf of the sending church. So some of you here might be thinking, yeah, we're going to send some people off. So you need to focus on how generous you can be, because it is a hard, really tough thing to lose some of those people and keep using the language of you're sending them. And of course, being a church that sends is a very biblical model. It's part of what we're supposed to be. All churches are supposed to be sending groups of people, but it can be painful and costly. So, and what happens is that when you send people out, you sort of feel bereft. So our church, St. Matthew's in Ipswich at the moment, they've been 2 weeks since they sent folks out. They are in grief. 25 of their friends that they've worshipped with for 20 years plus are now not there. They are in deep grief. And yet they also believe that God has sent them. So they are coping with that grief. But also they have lost two of their worship leaders, the two of the people on the sound desk, three of the home group leaders, the treasurer, some key givers. But in God's grace, what happens is new people step up. So my husband now goes to that church, and he never felt that he needed to, we're quite new still, but he never felt that he needed to use his skills in worship leading, because he could see that there were so many. But now that some of them have gone, he came forward and said, I wonder if I could help fill some of these empty slots. And lots of other people have done the same. So they've now got all their worship slots filled for the whole year. A new treasure has come forward. And it's just amazing that when you make that step of faith, God helps replenish and bring new people to faith. So I should have put lots of yellow people here. But this is the crucial part with the Minster model. I haven't snipped. I haven't snipped any of those arrows. Because with the Minster model of church, the Three Rivers United Benefice is like the Minster. It's like in the old days. They are going to carry on resourcing the church plant. So they're going to carry on sending some people there. They're going to carry on praying for it. They're going to carry on sending money. And they are going to keep seeing this as part of what they do. And in return, the people from St. Peter's, every now and again, will pop back to the sending church. And they will tell stories of what God is doing through this church plant. And they will encourage the others. And this sort of model particularly works where St. Peter's is in a poorer area. It could be in a poorer rural area or in an estate or in a town. Because often in those poorer areas, they're not going to be able to be self-financing. They need the bigger church to keep resourcing them to enable it to happen. So some churches, you can just send them off and they'll be able to work it out themselves. And others, you want to keep that umbilical cord. You want to keep it strong and thick. So there's lots of movement backwards and forwards. Both ways. Any comments on that? Have you seen that model anywhere, Lucina? Do you want to say anything about?
So I was rector of a team ministry, and within it we had, it was a church plant 100 years before, but it had to be renewed. So a little bit before I went there, a group from the larger church had made a commitment to go and worship in the smaller daughter church and help revive it. So, yeah, it's a good model that works, particularly in our Anglican setup within a team ministry.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Any other comments, questions? Anyone have experience of that? Yes.
Hi, yeah, that's really helpful. I guess I just was a bit surprised that sort of model of the sort of flows between the bigger and the larger thing isn't sort of common to all of the, you know, all of the sort of fresh expressions and so forth. I just would have thought if you're in a small place with, you know, 20, 30 people or smaller, it is great to be connected up to something larger. So, you know, we're in a sort of fairly sizable, I come here, so this is a fairly sizable village church, but I've been in small churches where it's just been sort of critical to be connected up to something larger so you don't feel like you're kind of holding the fort and on the defensive, but you sort of feel like you're kind of in a bigger movement. So I just wonder if you had any observations about that.
Yeah, I think a lot in rural places it tends to be, those links tend to be even more important, not necessarily for the money, but for the overcoming that sense of isolation and having friends. So often people become part of networks. So sometimes it's a diocesan network, sometimes it's New Wine or HDB, or there are obviously more Catholic models as well. So all sorts of new monasticism's got a lot of networks now. And then you can go to conferences and days and feel part of something bigger. So, yeah, thank you. Anything else? Yes. I've only got a few more to come, and then I'd love to get you talking to each other.
Hi. Well, I have two interests here. One is that we're a very small parish in a very sparsely populated deanery, and also I'm a geography teacher. And I'm really fascinated to know the geography of that and how that applies to, in our deanery, Ingworth and Sparham deanery, two tiny deaneries put together to make one geographically large, but we're very sparsely populated deanery, 35,000 people, 70 church buildings. But we do have ambitions. And we do have different areas where we are concentrating our resources and also trying to support our neighbouring parishes. But this is all within the established parish setup. And I'm sitting here thinking, so whereabouts is St. Peter's?
Yes.
Yeah, you've got your centre.
Yes.
But as a geographer, I'd like to know where it is. Do you set St. Peter's up, bearing in mind that there is already a parish there?
Yes.
With a very faithful congregation
of
six, little old lady and their dog. But they are still...
Well, it can be both. It can be in your parish or with a bright, appropriate invitation, bishop's mission order and Bishop say so, you can do it in other parishes as well. And I kind of think in most places, it's higher obviously in rural than in town areas, but it's something like 90 to 95% of people don't go anywhere near one of our churches. So even if there's another church there, if you can have good relationships, I think anywhere in the country is ripe for a plant of some sort, because there are always plenty of people who need to hear the good news. So I'm one of those people that thinks, I want every church in the Church of England, for example, to plant sometime over the next 10 years. And it will look different in every single place. It will look different. But I think most of our churches, perhaps the really tiny hamlets, it's much harder. But most churches, I think, got the capacity to start something new, new worshipping community. So I think it could be in or it could be outside. Yeah.
Really fascinating and interesting, and I'm enjoying it immensely. However, I am going to put some cold water on this.
Go for it.
And that is because in those communities in Norfolk, wherever you go, there is already an established church, an established church building. You're wanting to send out people to start something new. Those new people are going to go into somebody's home, into a school, into an abandoned cinema, garage, and they're going to have a wonderful time. They're going to vacate, leaving the faithful few behind who've got to look after a medieval building. See what I mean? There's lots of medieval buildings. I just wonder if we are abandoning our medieval buildings in order to do the new thing, the bright new thing, which is lovely and exciting and interesting. But at the same time, there is an issue there which I think we need to address.
Excellent question. My response would be that it's not a zero-sum game. It's not like there's a fixed number of people and some want to keep with the old and some want to do the new thing. And that's just it. And so what we're doing is just diluting. And yes, and making some people look after a building with fewer people. It's about constantly being missional in everything we do. So constantly, for everything we're doing, is making disciples. So what you hopefully are doing the whole time is doubling your congregations everywhere you go. If you're just doing this because you fancy a different way of doing things, we've lost the plot. The only reason for doing this is to help people come to faith and develop in that faith. So if a group goes off, and Fred, the Fresh Expression, I wonder if I'll get this exactly right, because it's a while since I've heard it, so if anyone else knows it. But I think for every one person that leaves a Fresh Expression, within 10 years, there are usually two extra people who have joined them who weren't Christians. Well, that's a huge percentage, much more than in our inherited churches. So every person that leaves to go off and set a church up in a garage, there should be two people who come to faith. Plus, in the church that they've come from, hopefully that they'll also be looking at how they can grow. And because they've been a sending church, God blesses that, new people will come in. So actually, I think it could mean more than double the number of people to look after our existing churches. What do you think?
Well, I've got plenty.
I've got faith for that. Did you want to say something? How are we doing for time, by the way? Because, okay.
Just to echo that, Rhiannon, that I was on a staff team in a church in Cambridge for 3 years that planted.
Oh, which church?
So St. Andrew the Great.
Yeah.
And on their second plant, I think it was nearly 100 people, 90 people that left. So real grief.
Yeah.
For sending church.
Yes.
But, by our great God's grace, I think within a year anyway, that the empty pews were filled.
Yeah.
So I think there is a real sense of, God blessing and people, like you said, stepping up. And I think being sort of moved to reach out more, seeing the empty pews.
Exactly. Because if on a Sunday morning you go to church, I mean, this, I know this isn't most of our experience, but if you go to a church like the one you just mentioned and every chair is full, then you don't really have much of a motivation to go back and invite loads of friends. But when you see that there's lots of space, you think, yeah, we want to. So there's more motivation all round to keep inviting and be more missional. So, yeah, that's brilliant if they manage to do that within a year. Sometimes it takes longer.
Can I just ask, in terms of the churches in Birmingham, how many of the plants out of somewhere like Gas Street went back into traditional buildings?
Right. So the first one, which is to this poorer area, they met in an old vicarage, and now it's grown to such a point that they want the church building sort of be made redundant. So they now want to do something about that. The second one to Coventry was to an old church building. The third and fourth ones we were thinking about before I left were we were going to look for modern buildings. What was behind your question?
It was just in response to the question earlier.
Yes.
You know, how actually the stories I hear down on the south coast, a lot of the church plants are going into redundant or fairly unused old buildings.
And they
are affecting them.
Yeah.
The Diocese of Chichester had a pastoral review of all the churches, and this is going back about 8 years, 10 years, and there was quite a large number of traditional churches on the list for closure, and one of those churches was the Deanery Church in Brighton, St Peter's Church, which is a very large Victorian pseudo-goth mammoth of a building. That was failing due to falling congregation numbers and overriding costs to maintain the church. And I think that I this was about 3 years before I left, so we're talking probably about 6 years ago. Nicky Gumbel's son, I can't remember his name, but led a plant from West Brom to actually come down and move into St Peter's Church, which was listed for closure under the pastoral review, and start worshipping there. And that church actually grew to about 400 or 500 people within a very short space of time and completely filled the walls of that church with worshipping Christians. And from what I understood from a lot of ordinands and people that were actually going there as part of their work experience, nothing detracted from the traditional use of that church and by existing members of that church. And it worked really well. Not quite sure where the liturgy went with it, but you know, apparently it was all very successful.
Thank you. Yeah. So I kind of think, as I said already, I put it out there that I think every church, pretty much every church, can do something in the next 10 years. Lots of dioceses have that as their plans. The Diocese of London, Diocese of Oxford have just said that. So Oxford's got something like 600, let's say 600 parishes, and their plan for the next 10 years is to start 600 new churches. But sometimes you'll be thinking, oh, I can't see that in ours. But if the leadership changed, if people understood about it, if someone new came, all sorts of things that can happen can start off all sorts of things. So I'd encourage you to have faith. And I also think it's a good thing for our buildings. In fact, quite a lot of church plants, as you said, are going into redundant buildings because we've closed them. And do you know Joe Elders? I think he lives in this diocese somewhere, but he's the head of the National Church Buildings, whatever it's called, thing. And that's a technical term. And he said, basically, what we've done in the past as the Church of England is we've shut closed churches. And now we're realising that we need them. So, you know, there's a real case for church planting being part of the whole movement of opening up churches that we didn't have before. Church Buildings Council, yeah.
We have 650 church buildings, of which 89% are listed buildings. And occasionally we get to situations where they're not really currently needed for worship.
Yes.
And so instead of making them redundant, we've created a Diocesan Churches Trust, which is a sort of way of making them putting them into hibernation.
Yes, this is brilliant.
Because it's already been our experience that sometimes people find redundant churches and want to bring them back to life. And the Church's Trust enables that to happen. So it's not sort of closing them forever. It's just for a time, perhaps, the sort of general mission of the church in an area is held back a bit by the number of buildings. Yeah. So we put it into hibernation, but it may come back to life again.
I think it's so good. In Birmingham, and I was totally part of this, someone came to me and said, we've got this church building, it seats 1,000 people, and the congregation is about 20, and for 10 years they've been weighed down by looking after the roof. And do we all agree, we're all sat around the table, do we all agree that we should sell it for £1 to the Seventh-day Adventists? And they all looked at me, Rhiannon, have you got any imaginative mission ideas? And I said, oh, no, I haven't. So we sold it for £1. Within 3 years, Gas Street wanted to plant there, and now we don't have it because we sold it for £1. And now they're trying to work out how to buy it back from the Seventh-day Adventists and all that. And I'm just thinking, oh, we were just too short-sighted because we didn't know that God had plans. So anyway, but it's great you've got that. Right, I'm gonna keep going because there's only a few left, but I want you to have a chance to talk with one another. Okay, how many people have heard of resource churches? Okay, so these tend to be town centre, usually city centre at the moment. However, there is an increasing number of rural resourcing churches around places. And is this one? Woo! We are at a rural resourcing church. Sally Gaze, who's my Archdeacon colleague in Ipswich, who used to be here, of course, she's setting up rural resourcing churches in Suffolk. And no doubt you have plans here as well. Okay, now this is bad. This is bad on my part because I've started with money and things never start with money or should never start with money. What I should have done is have a box that said vision. Okay, so apologies. But usually there is some money as well, but it should have started vision. Okay, so vision plus money plus some people. In this sense, the Three Rivers Resource Church. Send a couple, but it doesn't have to be a couple. It could be an individual, etc. And they go and set up a church, St. Peter's. It's a bit like the other, but St. Peter's continues to plant elsewhere. And in fact, all of these ones should have had a following on Arrow. But they don't just stop there. They then plant with perhaps another curate, another church, Bridge Church, just called it that because that's the one in Ipswich. And so basically what happens is here you resource the resourcing church, and then they keep on sending off plants. Now, in Birmingham, we set up this church that grew to 700 or 800. And we thought, great, we've done our job now. So what we've got to do now is move on to another area of the diocese that's not being looked after. That was so the wrong thinking. What you need with a resource church is you have to keep on resourcing it so that it can continue to resource other places. So, for example, in a city, you would keep sending a curate every year to that resourcing church so that those curates can keep taking a team from the bigger church and sending out. And the Bridge Church should have an arrow from it as well, sending out more. And, of course, there should be lots of yellow figures in that as well because people coming to faith. So a resource church is a fairly new thing in the Church of England, well, in its current format. But rural resources churches might not have quite as many people. But again, the idea is you resource them and then they resource areas around. Is there anyone from this church who could say a bit about what it means to be a rural resourcing church here?
Have you worked it out yet?
No. We are still trying to work that out. I mean, I guess what we're doing is we've got a number of missional communities that have established, and actually some of them look a bit like some of the things that you've already talked about. So we've got people who have, there's a confession coming here. We have somebody who has run Forest Church in the diocese, and is now doing something else actually in connection with the stuff that's going on in Downing. So we've got that going. We've got the youth team who are running the cafe church in Costa and Durham. And it's those kinds of things that have been popping up. It's all been resourced by the Fountain of Life from here. There's something like 14 different groups doing things in different places in different ways, addressing different needs or meeting with different groups of people. And some which I think we've got an activity actually which Andy on the far side there is heading up in a new estate in the other side of Watton, which at some point, if it had a formal place to meet, would develop into something more than it can be at the moment because there's no venue, there's no community centre. So there's those kinds of things going on.
Great, thank you. I'd say two things on the back of some of that. The first is there's a great nervousness usually about resourcing churches or resource churches. And usually people say things like they're going to steal all the people from surrounding churches. You're nodding. And so the Church of England's come up with this thing called good transfer growth and bad transfer growth. And I would encourage all of you to be only looking for good transfer growth. Good transfer growth is where someone goes to another church, let's say to a resourcing church, because they've almost given up on their faith. They used to be regular, they used to read their Bible, they used to pray, and it's just become less and less and less. They've married someone who's not a Christian, they've done this, they've stopped reading their Bible. And they've said to themselves, I'm going to give this one last shot, but I need to go somewhere that's lively. And so they go there, and then they're discipled, and they grow in faith, and they grow deeper, and they end up being part of a church planting team. That's good transfer. Bad transfer is if someone says, I'm a bit bored of my vicar, I've heard all their sermons before, and I want to go to that new sexy thing around the corner. That's just moving around disciples on the Titanic. It doesn't do anyone any favours. It's just shifting people around. So that's the first thing, is go for good transfer growth. Don't do the bad. The other thing is, I'd really encourage you, because so many people have concerns about the larger churches and resourcing churches, if you're part of a larger church here, I'd encourage you to keep faith, hold on tight, because you will get criticised. And if you're part of a smaller church, can I ask you to really speak well of those who are here from a larger church? Because they get a lot of criticism for all sorts of things. And we need to support anyone who's reaching out in faith, whether they're a resourcing church, a Minster model of church, a traditional model of church, an inherited church, a fresh expression, whatever. All of this is faith stretching. And we just got to stick up for each other, speak well of each other. And that particularly becomes important in this sort of thing because there's so much criticism. When we set up Gas Street Church, so as I said, like 70 new people becoming Christians every year, more church, all the clergy could do was criticise it. And we just can't have that. Right. Oh, I did put some yellow people in. I forgot. Woohoo. Right, I think this is the last one, but there is something else I want to show you. Right, multi-site church planting is where... So this, if you're in London, this happens quite a lot in London. So you might have lots of churches. They're all called different things. And you might have a cafe church in there as well. You might have a youth congregation, but they've basically got the same leadership team. So that's another model as well, multi-site. Now, a revitalization, I was asked to talk about revitalizations. There are different models for this, but basically, let's say you've got a small church and it's dwindled to 5 people in it. So one of the things you could do is a neighbouring church could send a team, let's say they send a team of 10, to go to that church. Now, either you see if you want to do something together, so you worship together and you've got 5, what did I say, plus 10, so you've got 15, so you've got more chance of things going. Or those 5 people want a particular type of worship and you make sure that they can continue their particular type of worship. And in parallel, you do something different. So there's different ways of revitalising churches. In Birmingham, we had a day conference, and we asked all the churches, if you'd like to be revitalised, then come and talk to this meeting with the archdeacons. And 35 of our churches went forward and said they wanted to be revitalised. The problem was we only had 2 churches who had the capacity to do the revitalising. So I imagine in this diocese, if it's like most, there'll be quite a lot of churches that are prepared to say, we need some help. But I'm hoping there'll be also churches that say, we can do this, and we can do it in the best possible way. Right, so what happens with these people? Okay, see, you've got the Three Rivers United Benefice, and then you've got another church, St. Helens. There's St. Helens, a mixture of people. And what happens is the Three Rivers United Benefice sends some leaders, because, again, you always need leaders, plus a team. This is probably too big a team. And together, they work as a new church, St. Helens. And I haven't said in this case whether they're worshipping together or having separate services, but they meet every Sunday, and new people are joining them from all over the place. Right, those are all my models. I wanted to just, what's your name? Sorry, you? Yeah, Deborah. Deborah was just talking about some of the things that have happened on the South Coast. And I clearly knew you were going to say that. So I've just got some pictures to finish off with, which is what's happened over the last 10, 15 years in this part of the coast.
Eastbourne is there.
Brighton, Chichester and Portsmouth. Okay, I don't. I'll read them out in case you can't see them. In 2009, St. Peter's Brighton, that you mentioned, was planted with a group of people who came from London. It was a barn of a church. It wasn't in a good state. It's now zinging and beautiful. So they planted a church, and that's now got 800 to 1,000 people. In 2013, so it took them 4 years, they planted a church onto a very poor estate in Brighton. In 2014, a year later, they planted into Holy Trinity Hastings. In 2016, some of them went across to Portsmouth and they planted another resourcing church there. So St. Peter's is a resource church, Harbour Church is a resource church, I'm not sure about Hastings. In 2017, St. Peter's planted into another church in Brighton. In 2017, the same year, they planted into Crawley. That's a really interesting one, because it's an Anglo-Catholic community with a charismatic community, and they've worked that really well. In 2018, Harbour Church down in Portsmouth, they planted two more churches. This year, St. Matthias has plans to revitalise a neighbouring parish. In this year, again, St. John's Crawley is developing planting plans. This year, St. Peter's Hastings is discussing how to expand its ministry within the town. St. Peter's is planning six more plants this year. And this one's quite funny. This year, Harbour Church is planting two more plants in the diocese and one in Wales. Obviously. God wants to do different things in different dioceses. This is the Diocese of Chichester. In 2008, they can't possibly have known that that was going to happen. But I wonder if that can happen in Chichester. What does God want to do in Norfolk? It's quite exciting. Those are some of the church planting values. I won't go into them. But this is the question I'd love you to discuss. So I don't know if you want to gather around tables or if you aren't many, perhaps you could gather together. What excites you about these different models or muddles that I've talked about so far? What might work where you are? So I've listed them again there. What excites you and what concerns you? So if you'd like to talk now, how long have we got? Have we got 10 minutes? Have we got 5 minutes? What have we got?
You got 15 minutes.
Does that include time for prayer at the end? Or how do you want to do it?
10 minutes with time for prayer?
10 minutes with time for prayer. Or perhaps 7 minutes, 3 minutes feedback, and then prayer. That would be lovely. So 7 minutes, just what excites you? What might work in your area?
Okay, be great to just have maybe a couple of bits of feedback. Anybody got anything that they would like to sort of contribute at this point, just in terms of how they're feeling, what they're excited about?
No, there's hands up.
Yeah, it's more a general thing, but I have been excited about how we've progressed through the weeks and how we've had the variety of topics covered. I was discussing this with a friend who's church planting somewhere else, and I, was going through all the different topics, and each time I think, oh, I wonder if we're going to, somebody comes and discusses exactly the next thing. And I think the variety has been very encouraging, and I think we were just talking with the bishop here, saying how wonderful that we're not trying to have a one-size-fits-all and have one formula, but actually acknowledging that different areas and different types of people in different contexts need different approaches. And I think that is the way forward, is recognising the, you know, the different approaches. So thank you for highlighting that.
Great, thank you.
I think one small revelation that's come out during the evening is the association with Costa. Because the village where we all live, a Costa has just opened.
Yeah, we've used the Costa Coffee in Dis for the last 12 years to run Youth Alpha courses, and they just turn it over to us. We get it on a Sunday night after they close. You still have to buy coffee, but it's not that cheap, but it's cheaper than hiring somewhere, and it's a really nice venue. So, yeah, anyone else? Okay, what we'll do is we'll bring our time to a close there, and just spend a few minutes in prayer, partly round in groups, and then I'll close it. You're hanging around at the end for a little bit, so the time to have a quick catch up at the end before you head off into the blustery night. I sort of feel that there should be a Winnie the Pooh poem there somewhere, but not quite coming. So let's just spend a few minutes around your tables praying about the stuff you talked about, those things that excite you, and then I'll bring it all together and we'll end our time there. So we bring these prayers before you now. We ask that you will grant the desires of people's hearts, that in years to come, the map on the wall will be the churches in Norfolk and the way they multiplied and grew. So we have faith that your hand will move in this area.